Welcome back to the MRMC Doctor's Office program, and you're probably going to recognize this voice. Dr. Jonathan Bath is with us, and Doctor, how are you today?
Oh, I'm very well, Bob. How are you? Thanks.
All right. Now, last time we talked, and let's do this briefly, where are you from? Because your accent isn't from North or Central Missouri.
That's right, yep. So I'm a little bit further east. So I grew up in London and did my medical school training there, and I've been in the States about 12 years now and did all my surgical residency and fellowship and vascular training in the States. So it's my short story.
All right. Well, what is your specialty?
So I'm a vascular surgeon, so I deal with blood vessels, all kinds. So,
what really got you interested in dealing with the heart?
It was just a variety of things that we could do. I really like treating the folks that we treat, and you sort of get to know them very well. They come back and see us over a long period of time, and, you know, I might have done 3, 4, 5 operations in different places on the same patient. So you sort of build up a relationship with people. Additionally, you know, we used to do everything with sort of big incisions and such, and nowadays we're doing more things with stenting and, you know, outpatient surgery. So I really like that as well. It's a good variety.
Is heart disease not nearly as scary as, say, it was 10 or 20 years ago?
Well, I think, you know, for the patients, I think it's still the same disease process. I don't think that's changed a lot. I think people are a little bit better informed now than they were before. And, you know, we have these campaigns to raise awareness of smoking and the terrible things it does to the body. And so I think there's a bit more of that out there. But really, I think it's still, it's the number one cause of death in men, and certainly it's approaching that in women, too. So we need to take it seriously for sure.
And Doctor, just about everyone we've talked to on the Doctor's Office program over the last couple of months, and this is the MRMC Doctor's Office program, a lot of the topic has been the dangers of smoking. We cannot overemphasize that enough, can we?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, Missouri is a state where there is a high prevalence of smoking, and we see a lot of these vascular diseases. Smoking causes hardening of the arteries. It causes aneurysms, which is sort of a ballooning and weakening of the wall of the arteries. And these are all life-threatening conditions. And many people don't think that. They don't associate smoking with strokes, smoking with ulcers and problems with walking on their, ulcers on their feet. And they don't really sort of, appreciate the whole body damage that smoking can really do.
And can that happen almost instantly, or does it take a long time of smoking to really cause some problems?
It takes a while for sure. I mean, if you were to smoke in, 2 to 4 weeks after starting smoking, you're already going to see some detriment, not necessarily to the arteries, but to the lungs and some reduction in blood flow. Smoking actually causes some spasm of the arteries, so you don't get as much blood flow where you need to get it. And then over many years, if you carry this on, this is where we see those significant problems. I just finished a 5.5-hour surgery on somebody who had smoked a long period of time, and so you can see it takes a long time to fix these things as well. So.
All right, this is a question I've never asked a vascular surgeon before that just kind of popped into my mind. Can you tell just by looking at someone or doing some tests whether they're a smoker or not?
Well, you can for sure. For example, we see a lot of folks who come into the office and, there are some telltale signs. There are some, signs on the moustache and some nicotine staining, et cetera, on the fingers you can see. But you can also see some people are not quite breathing as well as they should do. Some people's lips are a little blue because the oxygen they're not getting is they're not getting enough oxygen in their lungs. And then there are other subtle signs, like they don't have pulses in their feet because their arteries have become hardened. There are sort of sounds, whooshing sounds in their carotid arteries going to the brain that wouldn't ordinarily be there. So you can do a physical exam and very quickly figure out if somebody smoked before or not.
How about the dangers of secondhand smoke? Are they pretty prevalent too?
They are. I mean, typically it's unusual, I found in my experience, for folks to have one partner who smokes and the other who doesn't. There's a lot of folks who, do smoke together. And that's where really I think if one partner can try and quit, the impetus is on the other person to support them and try and quit as well. But sure, secondhand smoke, for children and adults and, those around you, it's much more than just what you're actually putting into your own body. You're really affecting those people around you as well. So that's something to think about.
Doctor, when we talk about aortic disease so often, we are talking about an older population, but can this affect youngsters too?
Absolutely. So, by youngsters in my trade, that's anybody sort of, 40s, 50s onwards, really. I mean, those folks are young in my world. And we see folks from 40, 50 years old to 90 years old. And so, aortic aneurysm disease, whilst it gets more prevalent, it's more common, in folks who are older. You certainly do see it in younger populations, and especially those who have had a history in the family of having a lot of aneurysms or sudden death, for example.
Can we even be talking potentially about teenagers or younger here?
Yeah, there are some certain disorders that can affect teenagers. It's not as common, and those are more genetic disorders. So people who have had a genetic sort of coding for having aneurysms, and that's really a more specialized entity than just normal aneurysms related to smoking. But absolutely, I mean, people in the family who have had sudden events where they've died, or you haven't really figured out what the deal was, or like an early aneurysm. Those are the kind of people who really need to go for early screening, I think.
So there is a reason why doctors have you fill out the paperwork looking at family history, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's not just more paperwork for the sake of paperwork, so it seems like that sometimes.
How about aortic disease? Is it prevalent from one generation to another?
It's not something that's generally handed down through the generations unless it's genetic. But certainly, I think in places with a high prevalence of smoking, obviously there's high prevalence of aneurysms, a high frequency of them. But there's some areas in the country that have very low smoking rates and have very low aneurysms, places like Colorado and Utah, for example. So really, we know that smoking is one of the most important things in controlling your risk factors for aneurysm disease and for even obtaining an aneurysm, for getting an aneurysm.
All right, for someone who is hearing that term for the first time or someone who isn't exactly sure what is an aneurysm?
Yeah, so it's a great question, one of the most common I get asked. So aneurysms are really sort of our area of expertise, and certainly mine too. And aneurysms are swellings of any arteries that really shouldn't be there. People may have heard of brain aneurysms. So I don't deal in the brain, but there are aneurysms all over the body. Aneurysms behind the knee, we call these popliteal aneurysms. And the most common one, which is sort of a silent killer, is the abdominal aortic aneurysm, or people call that AAA. And so really that's just a ballooning or weakening of the wall, and that can lead to catastrophic events if that breaks loose.
Doctor, are there some telltale signs that someone may be having an aneurysm and needs to get looked at immediately?
Well, yes. I mean, I see a lot of folks that get referred from all over the state who get flown into our hospital, and we sort of have a treatment protocol and way that we treat what's called ruptured aneurysms. So that's the sort of most life-threatening emergency that can occur with aneurysms. They can break loose. People tend to have sort of unremitting back pain, so back pain that's there all the time, or abdominal pain, and they just don't feel right. So those telltale signs, if you have an aneurysm and you know about it, really mean that you should get to the emergency room straight away.
Doctor, how many cases do you see that are of the urgent variety compared to maybe a preventative visit?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. I think if I were to think about our entire group of four vascular surgeons here, probably we would deal with a ruptured aneurysm maybe 10 to 15 times a year, so it's probably about one a month or so. That really varies, or I'd say ruptured or maybe urgent aneurysms. And we see a lot more of these, probably 10 times as many that are just your regular sort of non-emergency aneurysms that can be taken care of in an elective fashion. But it's relatively frequent.
How about a ruptured aneurysm? How do you take care of that? What's the treatment for it?
Well, interesting you should ask that. That's what I was doing two nights ago. So folks get flown into the hospital, and essentially we see them immediately, and we take them immediately up to the operating room after I chat with them in the emergency room. And there's a few ways of dealing with them. I mean, we're relatively sophisticated here with our endovascular, and that just means sort of minimally invasive through the arteries ways of treating aneurysms. We have a web page if people are interested that certainly we could circulate in a little bit. But we used to do the old-fashioned surgery where we sort of would make an incision in the belly, make a cut in the belly, and replace the aorta. We've tried to be a little bit more minimally invasive these days as patients do well, and we put stents and things like that in through the groin arteries. So that's really the majority of what we do these days.
So is it a long surgery? Is it a difficult one?
It can be a difficult one. It's usually not terribly long. As I say, we can usually accomplish this in less than 2 hours because, certainly if you're bleeding, you certainly want this to be taken care of quickly. And it requires a lot of good planning and a place that has expertise. We certainly have a multidisciplinary approach here at MU, and certainly at Mobley, we're seeing patients as well with complex aneurysm disease. And as you know, we run a clinic up there sort of every other Monday. But certainly we want to see these patients ahead of time. We don't want to wait until they become ruptured. And so we really would like people to get screened ahead of time.
Okay, how do you do that? What's the screening process, doctor?
Well, the easiest way is that there's a, you know, when you enter Medicare and become 65 years old, there's a free ultrasound screening test that can be done. It takes about 15, 20 minutes. It's completely free, and it's offered as part of the service. And they just wave the ultrasound wand over your abdomen and take a look and see if you have an aneurysm, sort of like doing a baby scan, if you will. And so really we've been trying to educate folks and say, listen, this is something we should try and have everybody do if you smoked and you're over 65 years old.
Are there things you can eat or not eat or drink and not drink that can help maybe prevent this from developing?
Well, I mean, I think that would be great if there was something that we could sort of do in that respect. But really the main thing is to not smoke. I mean, that's the number one risk factor for aortic aneurysms. Obviously taking your medications, controlling your cholesterol, making sure your blood pressure is under control. These are all important risk factors too, diabetes as well. But smoking is by far the number one and most important risk factor.
All right, let's talk about the Aortic Disease Center. What do you have rolling there?
So really this is what we call a multidisciplinary approach. That means you have surgeons, you have cardiologists, you have cardiac surgeons, and we all work together. We have a nurse practitioner who sort of coordinates a lot of this. And we find that folks who come from all over the state and even further out come and really be seen by these folks to have their aneurysms treated in a way that really is, you know, tailored to each individual patient. You know, we have a referral line. Again, we have a website for this that you can find if you type in MU Aortic Disease Center. And it really gives information for anybody who's interested in aneurysmal disease and a way of getting patients to, you know, where they should really be getting the best care.
Doctor, are we seeing more and more of that in medication there, in medicine these days, more of a team approach to dealing with someone's issues?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, really, it's been shown, and there's some good sort of published studies about this, that when you have places that are doing these complex cases on a routine basis, it means really that, you know, we're obtaining the best results. If you're only doing one or two or five of these a year, it's clearly not a place really that is going to be offering the same level of service and quality as someone that's doing, you know, 50 of these operations a year. And so that's really what we're trying to do really, is make sure that we give patients the best possible expertise with our team here.
Is each case a little bit different though, and each time maybe you'll find something that, hey, I haven't seen this before?
Yes, I mean, you know, each patient is a little bit different. There are some tricks to sort of doing these cases in most patients, and you get good at those when you do a lot of them. But certainly there are some unexpected challenges, and, you know, that's where we rely upon our colleagues and rely upon our experience here. So each one's sort of fun and interesting and you know, challenging to treat. So,
how key, too, are the primary care physicians in recognizing some of what may be going on and getting patients referred where they need to go?
Oh, I mean, the folks are absolutely key. And, you know, I've been up to Mobley and met with some of the primary care physicians up there. And really, we've spoken about the screening program and making sure that people get the CT scans, get the ultrasounds that they need. So really, you know, we rely heavily upon the primary care physicians and the cardiology groups to find and help us treat these patients. You know, they're the ones that are right there talking to them on a daily basis.
Doctor, where is this treatment of aortic care? Where is that going in the future?
I think it's really going to be going more and more minimally invasive. I think it's going to be very rarely that we'll be doing the open operations. They're great operations. They've been around for the past 30, 40 years. I enjoy doing them. Everyone else does too. But, you know, I think really for the patients, the minimally invasive approach, going through the groin arteries, a little smaller puncture, they go home the next day. That's really the way this is going in the future, honestly.
When you sit back and think about what you just said there, having this type of surgery and going home the next day, does that still surprise you that the body can heal that quickly?
Every single time I do it. I mean, you know, I've been doing this for a little while, and we used to have patients stay in the hospital 5 to 7 days and have a 4-week recovery. And there are some patients who need that open operation. But for the other folks, I mean, I did, a patient of mine was 84 years old and came in ruptured, and he's going home, you know, 2 days after the procedure. And he's already raring to go and asking me if he can go home on day two. And it's just a complete change in how we manage this, really. It's startling every time.
How about the healing capacity of the human body? How do you account for that?
Well, I think it's remarkable, really, what you can do to a human body and how they can respond favorably to it. I mean, you know, the grafts that we put in are sort of polyester-type material and the stuff that you use in rain jackets. And you can implant that inside somebody's body, and it can last for many years. It's sort of remarkable how the body can heal things, especially things that are foreign to them.
Doctor, when we talk about having aortic surgery, is that something that once someone has it, typically they're going to need another surgery at some point or not?
It's pretty unlikely. I usually say to my patients there's probably a 10% chance over your lifetime that you may need a little touch-up, and that can usually be something that we would do, again, minimally invasively. These grafts have a great track record, but they've been available since about 1994 when the first one was implanted. And so, you know, we don't have 50 years of experience yet, and sometimes these things need to have additional little corrections. But honestly, it's a pretty durable repair. It does last for a long period of time, but we must follow people up on a regular basis.
Yeah, what does that follow-up traditionally consist of?
Well, typically in my practice, I'll see people about a month after the surgery. If all's going well, we'll probably do a six-monthly scan and see people then. And if everything's well, we'll probably do a yearly ultrasound or a yearly CT scan. So it's not terrible, and we like to check in with people, make sure that they're doing okay, and, you know, most of all, just make sure there are no other further complaints.
And after some type of surgical procedure like that, are there generally restrictions people go home with?
Well, we certainly don't want them rushing around, you know, lifting heavy weights and driving around on the first couple of days after the procedure. But certainly within a week, people are feeling pretty good. And by the two-week mark, there's really very little restriction at all. And so I've had people go back to work and do pipe fitting and, you know, do mechanic work and stuff, you know, as early as sort of 2 weeks after an aneurysm surgery.
All right, let's hit on a topic that's probably near and dear to a lot of people's hearts. When you're talking about pressure and worry and concern, can that lead somehow to an aortic problem?
Well, I think people, it's interesting. When you talk to people and say they have an aneurysm, you know, the first thing that people think is, is this going to be a problem for me and am I going to die from it? Well, we have some good data that there's certain sizes that we need to fix this at. But there are some people who are anxious and who do worry, and some people whose blood pressure is elevated, and all these kind of features make you more likely to offer them a repair, especially if they're close to the size that we usually repair these aneurysms. So I don't think anxiety causes aneurysms per se, but I do think that people who have aneurysms do have some anxiety, and certainly controlling things like blood pressure and stress is probably a good way of making sure that you know, we keep a check on these things.
Yeah, and with that in mind, how important is it to get looked at maybe on a yearly basis just to see if for no other reason how your blood pressure is doing?
Absolutely. I mean, people should really be, I think, touching base with their primary care physicians. You know, they've got some great primary care physicians up at Moberly, and I meet with them on a regular basis. And we sort of just talk about patients with these risk factors, making sure they're taking their aspirin, making sure they're taking their cholesterol medications, you know, seeing if they can cut down or reduce their smoking, etc. And so these are all things that are going to allow you to prolong your life. And so it's really important, I think, that we have at least these annual checkups.
So, doctor, how should someone know or who should get that screen for potential aortic problems? Are there some particular risk groups out there you'd like to highlight for us?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, some of this can be found on our website, but we certainly want to see patients who have smoked for a long period of time. Patients over 65, especially men, they seem to get aneurysms a bit quicker than women, but women obviously do need to get screened too. Patients who have other risk factors, those who have had heart surgery, those who have high blood pressure, diabetes, and that's a lot of people that we see in mid-Missouri. So, you know, if you're thinking about it and you've got some of these issues, these are the folks that we really want to get in for a screening test, try and prevent this ahead of time.
Isn't the best thing from your standpoint when you can screen someone and you can tell them, hey, everything's okay?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no better feeling, I think, than going to the doctor's office, other than getting the bill, and telling people that there's nothing really that you know, that we need to do. So that's really sort of a great feeling, I think, that you can impart to a patient when things are well.
Now, I got to ask you, as we get ready to wrap up here in just a couple of minutes, you perform an emergency surgery like you did the other day. How rewarding is that for you when you can see the patient a day or so afterwards and they're walking up and they're fine?
It's probably one of my favorite things, and that's what really gets me up in the morning, and, you know, gets me working 5-6 days a week. It's one of my favorite things to do is talk to the family and tell them that things are okay, and, you know, their loved one's going to be able to go home soon. So.
Yeah, I imagine. Can you understand what the family in the waiting room's going through while that surgery's taking place?
Yeah, I mean, we've all been on the opposite end of it. You know, my wife has had surgery and other loved ones, and so we all sort of know what it's like to have somebody and you're waiting for the surgeon to come out. And so, you know, I empathize with the wait, and we try and provide updates, and you know, I try and sit folks down and have a good conversation with them before and after about it. So I absolutely know that feeling.
Doctor, finally, how about the team? Do you have a good group of folks working with you? I'm talking not only your doctor colleagues, but the nursing staff too.
Oh, absolutely. And I would say they're even more important in some senses than our colleagues. You know, they're the ones that drive the ship. They're the engine of it. Both my clinic folks at Moberly, you know, which you'll meet them. There's Danielle and Melanie up there, and also my folks down here at MU. You know, it's a great group of people that we work with, and, you know, it's been a lot of fun.
All right. Hey, Doctor, thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate the time.
No problem. Take care, Bob.
Dr. Jonathan Bathey's joined us today on the MRMC Doctor's Office program.